From the 915 to H-Town, from the Panhandle Plains to the Valley, and everywhere in between. This is the 50-50 Podcast, powered by National Scouting Report. Join me, Hector Cano, as we cover the Texas high school club and college soccer landscape, along with an inside look at the college soccer recruiting scene. The 50-50 Podcast is a platform about the people and for the people who are dedicated to the beautiful game. Here we go. It's another edition of the 50-50 Podcast, episode 108. My next guest, he is Lucas Henderson, the head women's soccer coach of Monmouth College, out of Illinois, the Fighting Scots. Coach, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Happy to be here with you. I know you and I go back, I don't know, man. It seems like, probably a good three pre-pandemic, I think, right?
Yeah. You were one of the guys I got in touch with when I first started hitting up Texas for some recruiting back in 2018, probably.
Has it been that far back?
Was it 2019, really? Maybe? Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because I think I was in El Paso at the time. It was definitely – that's why I say pre-pandemic. I think – no, I think I was – I don't even think I was in El Paso yet, actually. Yeah, now that you said – yeah, 2018 sounds right. So,
yeah.
Man, all that to say, we're getting old. Yeah. you're getting old. I'm getting distinguished. That's what I say.
Right? There you go. Yeah.
So, Coach, welcome. Glad to have you here. Excited to have you here. And I really get excited whenever we get coaches, particularly from the D3 side of the house, because that tends to be the one. I don't know. Call it the division most overlooked, maybe most, or I don't know if most misunderstood, but definitely misunderstood. So always excited when we have, and we love, you know, kind of sharing, you know, spreading the wealth and sharing the love with not just D1, you know, but all programs. So we're excited to have you here. And, but before we kind of dive into what's, you know, Monmouth, your program, everything, tell us, what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I really like how you put that. Just because I think, you know, not to jump off on a tangent immediately, but I think when you talk about, you know, the D3 level, I think something that that I think is really important is that people understand that every level is very good for a very specific person, and every school is very good for a very specific person. And the more we can kind of bring light to that, the better. But no, I'm good. Excited about where we're headed. We've obviously just jumped into spring a little bit, and definitely getting to that busy period where the high school season is starting up in Illinois. So we're going to start seeing some games on an individual level, and get the recruiting going again. So
yeah. Now refresh my memory if I get this right, because I think Illinois is one of those states that splits. Does I think boys high school in the fall and girls high school in the spring? Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I'm in Western Illinois, so we do obviously kind of cross over into Iowa. That is both are in the spring, but in Illinois it is split.
Yeah. Okay. How, from your perspective, because I know you're not entrenched in the high school game, but from what you hear, what you see, what are your thoughts on that? Do you make anything of it? Does it seem to work pretty well? What are your thoughts on that, just from the feedback that you get?
In terms of the recruiting scene in high school?
Yeah, well, just how they're uniquely split, right? Because I know when I was coaching college at the Air Force Academy, the Colorado does the same thing where they split the boys and the girls, and one is playing high school while the other's playing club, and then they flip-flop, right? So I was just kind of curious, what do you see? What's the kind of feedback you get on that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I also grew up in Wisconsin, which does the same thing. And I think one of my favorite aspects of it is that, for smaller area, for smaller schools, more rural areas, it can be hard to find two coaches to run two programs at the same time. And those places can have the same coach for both programs, and they can do a great job. The first coach I ever worked for, he was both the men's and – or the boys and girls coach, I should say, for – Eau Claire North High School in Wisconsin. But I think the drawback definitely is that on the girls' side, this year we're kind of blessed with some pretty great temperatures so far. And but usually there's still snow on the ground right now, and the girls kind of get the short end of the stick when it comes to that in terms of their preseason. A lot of times preseasons begin in high school gyms, you know, and that's not ideal. But if they could push it out a little bit, that would be great. But otherwise, it's very good.
Yeah. Okay. Good. That's interesting. Yeah. You know, as I mentioned to you offline before we came on, was our Illinois, somehow, some way, we ended up with this tour of the great state of Illinois, right? You're, I believe, the third or fourth coach that we've had on in the last 3 to 4 months with either directly a head coach, assistant coach, or, you know, or links to a program out of Illinois, right? Regardless of levels. So kind of interesting, kind of cool, kind of funny how that all happened. Not by design, trust me, but
why not?
No, nothing against Illinois. It's like we're going after quality coaches that want to join us, that are going to come on here and give us great content. And this case, it's just happened to fall, you know. It's happened to fall where we're getting a few in Illinois. So all that to say, some good coaches, some good programs in Illinois, right?
Sure.
So we look, you know, talk to us a little bit, you know, we're going to talk more in depth about, you know, Monmouth in a second. But in terms of you're just getting ready to kick off your spring season. You look back, you reflect on your 2023 fall season, right? You just wrapped up, I believe it was your third season, right?
Third
fall
season. Yeah. Third season.
So 3 seasons in, and you reflect back on your latest fall season. What are your initial thoughts, initial takeaways?
I think it's important to start with the fact that we didn't quite get where we wanted to. You know, a playoff spot in our conference is tough to get to. There's 4 teams that do it. You know, we're not a conference that takes 6 or 8. And I think for that creates a lot more parity within the conference, and every regular season game counts, every conference match counts, you know? So there's beauty in that, but it's tough. And we didn't quite do it. We were a spot out of the playoffs. Came down to the final week. All credit to the 4 squads that did it. They did a fantastic job. We had a couple of results I wish we could add back, but one thing I will say is that I think overarching, we are definitely headed in the right direction. You know, we finished last in the conference the season before, which is very difficult for me and for our squad. We knew that we had a lot more to give, and that, you know, I think we had a really young team that year as well. So to see us take a big step forward, you know, we were projected to finish second to last in the conference in the preseason poll. Love those things. Red bulletin board material, right?
Right.
We fell just a little short of what we thought we could do. But I do think we definitely outpaced what maybe others thought we could do.
And it's so true too with these preseason things. Oh yeah. I used to love those.
I think people talk, oh, it's such a pointless thing. I'm like, who cares? It's fun.
Yeah. Wanted to highlight a shout out to my good friend, Gibbs Keaton over at the head women's soccer coach at UTEP, who's sneaking in some jokes here, right? So MX Joe Rogan looking great in green. Shout out to coach, to Gibby. I mean, you're kind of assessing 3 years in, right? And when you first came in, because obviously you took over for, you know, a previous coach who we also know, who's been a regular on here on the podcast.
Who knows that guy?
In Nick, right. Yeah. Good old our friend, Nick Rizzo, who's now at St. Mary's. What was your stepping into that program, knowing full well that he's built a solid program there. What were your thoughts in terms of maybe what you were expecting to walk into versus the reality of what you had to learn on the job there?
Yeah. There's so many things that, I think everyone has things they wish they could change or do differently when they look back on something like this type of transition. There's so many aspects of kind of what changed, you know, at once. We had, I came in January of 2021. So, they had just not had a season in the fall because of the pandemic. They had a coaching change where, Nick left in late September, early October, something like that. So there were a few months where they were filling the position. I wish I could have gotten in just like a tiny bit sooner, just in the sense that, by the time I was able to start reaching out to our current players, there were a number who had already stepped into the portal, and rightfully so. Everyone has the right to, you know, find their best fit. You know, and I really commend the players who stuck around. You know, they didn't sign up for a coaching change and a loss of season, and it's a hard transition. We had a really big and strong senior class that first season. I think that was another aspect of the transition that was a challenge. They had been with one type of coach for the past 3 years. They'd found a lot of success. You know, they won the conference tournament in 2019. And so, the expectations, I think, were high. The idea was to step in and continue the, you know, winning and the legacy that, you know, Nick had created. Right. And it was disappointing to not exactly do that. We actually got knocked out of playoff contention on the final day in the final 5 minutes. We lost in double overtime back when they still had overtime. We lost in double overtime to a team that leapfrogged us for the final playoff spot that first season. That was very hard.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that transition was very challenging. We graduated 12 seniors after that first season. Hence, you know, the challenging year two. So yeah, there were a lot of aspects that I, you know, definitely have learned a lot since. I will say that. And I'm very blessed to have found my way to Monmouth. It's an incredible institution with a lot of winning in its history in a lot of different sports. And we have, you know, I will talk more about the program, as you said, but I think more than anything, I'm just thrilled to have had the opportunity, you know, whether we've necessarily met all of our goals these first couple of years or not, because everything's been a fantastic learning experience. And I've gotten to know some pretty incredible, you know, women along the way who are, you know, many who have graduated and are now doing great things, you know, outside of Monmouth. So, I think that, it was a shell shock for sure stepping in as well. Going from a junior college program to a D3 program was also a pretty big change.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the other piece, so help me understand this, right? So Coach Rizzo leaves, in the fall of 2020, but meanwhile, the girls there in the program, right? The ladies in the program, they hadn't really played a competitive match since what? Probably March.
Since the NCAA tournament match against St. Thomas in 2019.
So going back to, okay. So from November of 2019, right? Then you arrive January 2021, but your first actual match isn't until the spring. That was that weird spring season, right? That counted.
We didn't actually have a spring season either. Our conference did not compete that spring. So we didn't have one until that next fall.
Wow. Okay. So they went 2 years essentially.
Yeah. I mean, my senior class that first year were sophomores when they went to the NCAA tournament. So there was definitely a lot of change to the team as well. That class was very good though. But there was definitely, you know, there, I think three or four leading scorers from that 2019 season had all graduated. A lot of starters. So it wasn't like I thought it would be like the same team, same situation, but, it was definitely, I think from the outside looking in, people had an expectation of, oh, they just won the tournament in 2019. Let's see them do it again.
Yeah. So you go almost 2 years without a competitive match. And then that fall, you also graduate 12. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's something. So what was that like for you though, from the coach perspective? You know, you're the new head honcho, right? You arrive in January, but you don't play your first competitive match really until what, August or what, September probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Of 2021. What was that like just from the internal and external perspective? What was that like for you?
I was just trying to make sure we got the recruits in because, you know, any coach that's taken over a job in the winter knows that first recruiting class is a big challenge. We brought in four players that year and, you know, that's something that now we're kind of seeing the back end of, because now our senior class is going to be pretty small this fall. That's what that group was. You know, I think the anticipation obviously built quite a bit. We tried to really focus on maintaining a strong culture and putting the most competitive. I was learning the ropes as far as the Illinois recruiting scene was concerned. I coming from Wisconsin, obviously, one thing I thought was, oh, I'll just grab a bunch of recruits from Wisconsin. I got all these connections up here. Well, let me tell you, it is hard to pull recruits from Wisconsin on the D3 side, because there's obviously a lot of really, you know, high quality institutions, and a lot of people like to stay close to home, keep that in-state tuition, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I currently have one player from Wisconsin on my roster. Wow. And so I definitely had to hit the ground running as quickly as I could in terms of getting to know as many people in the surrounding, you know, kind of soccer hotbeds in my area. Chicago mm-hmm. being the obvious one, but also Peoria, which has fantastic soccer, you know, Bloomington Normal, as well as the Quad Cities. So yeah, I was trying to do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. But so what was the biggest adjustment? Or no, well, I guess the adjustment you struggled with the most going from, you know, you were a JUCO, junior college coach, you stood up your program there, you had a very successful program that you stood up.
Yeah.
And now you dive into, you know, the 4-year institution, at the D3 level. Was there something that maybe surprised you that didn't quite come to you as easy as you thought? Or I don't know, it could have been the Wisconsin thing that you mentioned, but
I think the anticipation that, you know, every year is essentially a rebuild when you're coaching JUCO.
Right.
You're replacing usually over half your roster every year. You can't, and everyone else is too. You cannot as quickly turn something around at the Division III level. You can't build Rome in one day. Like it's something where you have to have a long-term plan that's deliberate. You have to be able to convince great people and players that they might not see the success at the end of it. You know, they're the ones planting the trees, but they're not going to see the shade. Right.
Right.
And so it is something where it's a labor of love, very much so, where, you know, I knew it would take a little time, but, I came to learn pretty quickly that this was going to be a project where, you know, I wasn't going to see exactly the results I wanted to in year two or even in year three. And I think we're just now starting to really, I think we saw some really good signs in year three, and we're, you know, I think there's no excuses in season four. But that I think has been the biggest adjustment from,
yeah,
starting a junior program from nothing. It didn't exist. And, you know, we were, you know, by my second season, we were the 2 seed in the region, and a game away from the national tournament. Right. Yeah. And so, you do that with strong recruiting, with scholarships, with, you know, getting into places like Texas. I loved recruiting in Texas when I had JUCO dollars, let me tell you. The way you recruit changes, the way that you build, culture build changes, the way that you can, you know, create more of a player-led program at a 4-year school, mm-hmm. where at a junior college, a lot of players are looking to you over those 2 years, right? So yeah, a lot of differences.
Yeah, and you know, I've been on the record saying that if I was a head coach of a D1 program, I might want to consider having a former junior college coach as my recruiting coordinator, because now that, especially at that level, the D2 world kind of too, D3 is a little different, but in the world now of NLI, you know, you're having, or NIL, I should say, you're having to recruit just like a junior college coach, right? You're having to recruit your own players, right? Every year, right?
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I thought, man, it's like junior colleges, that's like right in their junior college coaches, that's right in their world. So yeah, it's interesting to see how that's now flipped on its head, and you're seeing that with your Power Fives, your Group of Fives, your D1s, your D2s. How is that NIL world existing in the D3 side of the house from what you've seen?
You know, I think it definitely is regional in terms of, I'm sure there's conferences in parts of the country that are doing it a little bit more than we are. I think I saw one program in our conference put together an NIL collective. To what degree is a great question, right? I don't know. It looks like it's kind of just a crowdfund that is set up for alumni donations to then flow into the players in some form or fashion. And I don't know that the flow will be necessarily strong. I have no idea. One of the reasons I wanted to be a Division III coach was because I think that I've always been someone who's always wanted to be a winner, but I want to have a well-rounded experience for both myself and my players. And
absolutely.
I think that you can do that at a lot of levels, but I think that D3 offers the best opportunity for you to be both, you know, player, an athlete and a musician, mm-hmm. or which was me in college, or for someone to be both an athlete and, you know, involved in philanthropy with sorority, right? There's so many academics, right? And so there is, you know, we don't currently have an NIL system in place at Monmouth College. I'm definitely not in any way opposed to, you know, that aspect of the game. I just think that at the Division III level, it's going to be hard to come by in certain areas. And I think that programs that have NIL collectives are still not necessarily going to be, you know, funneling, you know, money more than they know what to do with, you know, into these players. Now, I think players work very hard. Our student athletes work incredibly hard and deserve opportunities, compensation, whatever we can get them. But, you know, I don't think it's as much of a reality in the Division III landscape, at least on the soccer side of things. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure their football programs are probably doing it all over, but, you know, I think that's the reality of where we are.
Yeah. So I got a couple of common misconception questions here for you. All right. So yeah, first one.
Let's do it. Let's knock them out.
Most common misconception about Monmouth.
Ooh, wow. That's a good one. I think that people are often surprised by how we are in a rural area, but the campus itself is an incredible community, and people who aren't sure if they're going to enjoy kind of like a country town fall in love with our campus and our community. I would say that's a big one. People who aren't sure about the size of our campus, you know, we have about 800 students. People are surprised all the time. I always tell our recruits, you just got to get here and see it for yourself. I think there's something kind of magical about it when you're here. And I think it's hard to describe to somebody who hasn't seen it in person. But yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest misconception tied to Monmouth.
Now paint the picture here for us, Coach. I know you said Western Illinois, but give us an exact location. Where, how far, proximity, yeah. where are we at here?
So to give you as best a picture as I can geographically, the Quad Cities are an hour north, directly north. So we're not necessarily down into Central Illinois. We're not definitely not down into Southern Illinois, but we're almost parallel to Chicago in how far north we are in the state. Mm-hmm. We're just then 3 hours out west.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And how often do they confuse you with the other Monmouth? You get that all the time? God, that must...
The number of emails...
That must be fun.
Every recruit, okay? If you email me and you are from New Jersey and you tell me that you have a tournament this weekend, like over by Rutgers, I'm going to say, that's great. I will not be there. Like, I, you know what? What I always try to do, and I really try to do this as often as I can, when I get emails from student athletes who are trying to get in, I can usually infer when someone's trying to get in touch with Monmouth University over in New Jersey, Division I program.
Yeah.
I try as often as possible to respond and very kindly say, this is who we are. If you're interested, let's definitely talk. But if you're looking for this, let me point you in the right direction. Get them to their website, get them to the recruiting link. I've got it all pulled up at this point, you know?
Right. Gotcha. And that was kind of why I asked that, just kind of little PSA there, right? So you could get it out there. Right?
Listen, at least we're not a St. Mary's or a Concordia, man.
Oh, like, go ahead. Yeah.
You know, like a Wesleyan or something, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now here's the other one. Here's the other half of that. Most common, so big picture here now, most common misconception about D3 soccer.
I think it's that it's going to be more expensive. I mean, if your expectation is to get a full scholarship, then yes, it is going to be more expensive than that. We seem to be, from the recruiting battles I've had with just about every level, we are very competitive in terms of the financial aid packages that we put together versus athletic scholarship giving programs. So, unless you're getting, you know, above the average in terms of an athletic scholarship from an NAIA, from a D2, from a D1, we're going to be at the same level or very similar. People get sticker shock when they see private school tuitions. You know, I think our tuition is 40 something. And nobody's paying that. You know, nobody's paying. Our academic scholarships are incredible. And so I think that that's a big misconception at the Division III level that it's going to cost more, when in reality, sometimes it's going to cost, sometimes it's going to cost less, but a lot of times we're going to be very competitive.
Yeah. Now from the, is there a particular, cause I'm sure you get this from time to time, but is there a particular set of academic programs that maybe Monmouth is kind of traditionally or historically known for, maybe?
You know, we actually don't, you know, I'll say this. We have a couple of programs that are very niche that I think are really cool. We have a classics program that not a lot of schools in the country have. That's, you know, kind of like a Roman and Greek history type of program. I think that we do a really good job with our kind of pre-athletic training, pre-PT, you know, those, that program. It's, we call it our health science and human movement program. I think it's phenomenal. We have our biggest program is our business program. Yeah, I think, you know, what I think is great is that our academics seem to be, you know, to me, very strong across the board. And I wouldn't say there's one that necessarily stands out too far above the rest.
Okay. How has, in your time there, right, your overall experience, how has, I don't know, how would we phrase this? How has it evolved on just the soccer side? Like, what has been the biggest, I don't want to say change, because change can go in a number of directions, but right, something that has clearly progressed and evolved from day one when you arrived to now, maybe what has been the biggest in terms of the program? Mm-hmm. What has maybe been the biggest one that you can point out?
Yeah. I think that, you know, I want to be careful in how I say this, because I don't think that, you know, whatever. And I, Nick Rose and I are actually very close friends. Mm-hmm. We talk almost every day, probably. I think that the culture needed changing, but only because there had been kind of a vacancy for a while. And right. I also think that, understandably, a lot of players who were in their final season when I arrived, you know, had this idea of, you know, I'm not changing for the new coach, right? And they had done it this way for a while. They had been successful. And while Nick Rizzo's way is fantastic and he does a great job and he's a coach that I admire, it wasn't my way. And that created a clash. And so I think that one of the biggest changes that I've seen is that the program mirrors what are, you know, mirrors my priorities and mirrors the culture that, you know, I want to have in our, on our campus. And so that took time. You know, one of the things that has always been important to me as a coach is making sure that we have a cohesive culture that everyone understands. And it's one of the secrets is that it's never perfect, right? You're constantly addressing something different. I've told my players this before. I use this analogy sometimes that I think culture is like a houseplant. It can be looking fantastic and beautiful. And if you just say, all right, that's it, I'm done, right? Walk away from it. You know, it doesn't take long for, you know, things to start wilting. And so it takes constant maintenance. And so we had to build it all over again at the beginning. And then since I've had to maintain and continue to look to improve and tend to it. And so, you know, in the process, I've probably been killing my houseplants at home since I'm not actually taking good care of those. But I think that's something that's been the biggest change has just been over time. You know, the culture mirrors who you are and what you want your program to look like.
Yeah. I like that houseplant analogy. I like that. I might have to steal that one from you. So,
you know, there's a possibility I stole it from someone. If I did, sorry. Probably.
We're coaches. Coaches are master thieves. We steal from each other. So that's what I always say. So now we transition here, Coach. Tell us your thoughts as you sit from, you're close enough, but you're far enough, right? The state of, as we discuss, we shift and look at the state of college soccer, right? Mm-hmm. So whether it be the women's side, the entire, both men's and women's, all the different levels, the state of, you know, because since 2017, you know, college athletics has seen more change, saw more change in about a 4-year period, right, from 2017 to 2021 than the previous 100 years, right? So between the official launch of the transfer portal to then, of course, the pandemic, the fallout, the super senior years, the fifth year seniors, all that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, and now you have NIL, right? Mm-hmm. So as you look at it, so there's a ton there, right? But if you look at it from, you know, Coach Lucas Henderson's, you know, part of the world, how do you assess, how would you describe the state of college soccer?
Ah, that's a great question. I think what I'm seeing is great coaches all over the country. And I think the way that coaching has evolved in that time is also important to point out. So not just the game of soccer, not just the way that we have things like the transfer portal and NIL, but also the way that coaches run their programs. I've seen a lot of coaches who are learning on the fly as these things change and are, really grinding and making sure that they're on the cutting edge. And I think there is a specific type of grind that coaches have in the collegiate world that is hard to describe to, somebody who works in sales or something. And while I think a lot of what we do is sales to a degree, I think we have to be social media managers. We have to be, rule book experts, and we have to be recruiters. We have to be coaches. We have to understand, our players' emotions, and we need to be empathetic and understanding. I think there's just so many levels to what we do. And I think what I've seen is just how much the world of coaching has risen to meet the challenge. And I think it's pretty impressive to see from where I sit.
Nice. I like that. What's the biggest change you've seen in you, the coach, Coach Lucas Henderson, since arriving at Monmouth? If you evaluated yourself, right? How would
My report card is incomplete still, but I think the biggest change for me, and I think that I honestly think my players would say the same, is that I came in with a certain level of, I was coaching junior college athletes. It was all freshmen and sophomores, and they required a specific type of coaching that is so different from when you come here, because at this level, they're adults. You got to treat them like adults, and they are at the JUCO level too, but I think they just need a little bit more guidance. I can push them harder, and that's something that I keep trying to grow as a coach in, is understanding just how incredible the limits, how incredibly far out the limits are on what, what the threshold is for my players in terms of what they can withstand and what they can handle and how much they want to grow and be pushed. And so I don't think when I got to Monmouth, I was the coach that pushed enough. And there's certain things that I regret about the way that I did things the first couple of years, because you think about how I had this squad where I had 12 seniors who had seen it all and done it all. And I came in and I was too soft-handed. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I think as coaches, we have to make sure we don't have so much pride that we can't admit our faults. So I think that's been my biggest area of growth, is just, and it's something I'm still working on, finding the threshold and pushing the limits of our players and holding them accountable as best that I can, to make sure that, we all rise to the standard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a lot of courage to be able to put that out there, Coach. So I really appreciate that. Thank you for your candor, and transparency. Really appreciate that. Yeah. we look forward. Now you're kind of stepping into your, tell us a little bit of your 2024 spring season. What is that looking like? And maybe what are a few players that maybe you can highlight, you can tell us about?
So, you know, our spring season is a little bit different at the D3 level than it is at others. We only get one competition day plus an alumni game, which we will be doing this year. Alumni, get back to me. Let's go. I think the biggest thing is we have more training days than we have in the past. That's the new rule this year, right? We have, I think it's right. 24 days to compete. You know, in the past, I think it was 15.
Was it 15? It was 15.
Okay. 15 or 16, yeah. It's crazy to think about now because so what we've been doing now is really focusing on, you know, we get in the weight room, obviously, and then we train once a week. We have some conditioning once a week as a team, and obviously they do more outside of that. But, you know, what I'm looking forward to is when we get into March and out into the nicer weather, we're training 3 days a week. You know, as soon as they're done with spring break, we're training 3 days a week, and then we're competing in a scrimmage against a junior college program in the area, Southeastern. Mm-hmm. Then we have our alumni game as well in that weekend. So that's the second weekend in April. So I'm very much looking forward to that. I think that, you know, in terms of players to highlight or anything like that, I think right now what I'm excited about is just continuing to push our young players and to kind of see our upperclassmen continue to grow into their own as leaders. We graduated a senior class of five that were all high impact players for us. Mm-hmm. And they were captains, you know, a few of them were captains on our team, and the other ones were definitely leaders who carried the water as well. And so just seeing who can continue to grow and step into the role is very important to me. I don't know if it'd be right to highlight any one or two at the moment, just because mm-hmm. I think it's a very collective push.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Now, final question here before we start to transition here, Coach. So this one, I love asking this one of college coaches, right? It really kind of puts you on the spot here. So,
all right.
So finish this sentence. The 2024 season, fall season, right? Your fall season. The 2024 season will be a success if?
If we're a playoff team. I don't think there's any excuses. Actually, that should be the floor. I guess we should start there. And to me, that is still a success because it's something we haven't done in the last 3 years. The reason I say that is as far as the playoffs being the goal is because I know that with those four teams in the Midwest Conference playoff, anything can happen. We've seen the four seed go on to win the thing. We've seen the one seed blow through it. We've seen two or three seeds. I think it's the parity in our conference is really great and among the top like 4-7, 4-6. And so, you know, I think that success is being in that mix and having a shot at the NCAA tournament. I think it has to be.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I like that. That's specific, right? So oftentimes we get that very general one. So I like,
you know, that. I want them all to grow. I want them all to become all right. better people in the process and me too, yeah. but yeah. God, right. I want to be in those playoffs. We got to do this thing.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with it, right? We're all competitors, so we're fooling yeah. ourselves if we think we're trying to paint the picture that we're not, right? So, but yeah, that's going to do it for our first segment, Coach. We're going to mm-hmm. transition here. We'll move over to our counterattack segment where we get to ask you just random off the wall questions. But before we do that, let us tell you about our good friends at Gipper. Gipper is a way that schools, athletic departments, ADs, and coaches create world-class marketing content. Join over 4,000 coaches, ADs, SADs, and club directors that use Gipper to create high-quality visual branded graphics for your program. The best part, anyone can do it in seconds on any device without needing any design experience whatsoever. The interesting thing about Gipper, though, is if you do have significant design experience, you're what they call the power user. It's specifically designed for you as well because it can be extremely complementary to having previous skills with this. So, and on top of that, just for being a listener of the 50/50 podcast, you can receive 10% off any first time Gipper purchase. Simply visit gipper.com/partner/50/50 to learn more. Again, that's gipper.com/partner/50/50 to receive your 10% savings on any first time Gipper purchase. And our good friends at Global Scarves. Global Scarves is a top provider of custom knitted scarves, beanies, and other fan merchandise in the United States. All merch is fully custom with free design services and free shipping on all orders. You can contact them at info@globalscarves.com to get any free designs or quotes built out for your school, club. Maybe you have a supporters group. You want to do something separately. They'll do that too. Big thing, again, is like free designs, free shipping. They'll work on, they'll get quotes out to you right away. Our good friend, Bill and Kyle, you can, again, you can contact them at info@globalscarves.com. Simply mention the podcast or use the code #5050pod and they'll be sure to take care of you. So, all right, coach, moment of truth, counterattack, where we get to have some fun, not at your expense, but with you, right? So are you ready? All right, first one out of the gate, since you mentioned overtime earlier, golden goal rule, yes or no?
I like it. I just love the excitement of it, the drama.
I love it, too. You know? Yeah, I love it, too. Yeah. I've always been a fan of it,
I've had some great memories of golden goals.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. So, all right, next one. Secret talent. Maybe not too many people know about you.
Yeah, I play the drums. I have my whole life. I definitely haven't as much in the past couple of years, busy times. But yeah. That's a passion of mine.
Awesome. Good. The drums. So when did you start that?
6 years old, probably. I mean, I've been a lifelong musician for sure. I actually got married 2 years ago, and there's a video somewhere out there of me playing at my own wedding.
That's fun. Awesome. Great deal. Good deal. All right, next one. Day person or night owl?
I think day person. If you ask me day game or night game, I'll say night game, but I think in terms of just in general, more of a day person. Okay. If I ruined one of your future questions, then I apologize.
No, you're good. You're good. All right, next one. Lake or ocean?
Lake. I grew up next to Lake Michigan. I'm a lake guy.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I am too. Now those things are monstrosities, man.
My wife, when she saw it, yeah, she's like, this is just the ocean. I'm like,
that's what I said.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. The first time I saw them, I was like, the Great Lakes. I was like, oh my God, that's not a lake, man.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, I'm a lake guy as well. I often refer to the amount of things that we know more about space than what's under the ocean. So
yeah, no, I don't mess with the ocean. Absolutely not.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. My take exactly. So, all right. Next one. Sunday dinner. You're the chef. You got all kinds of family, friends, loved ones, coaching buddies coming over. What are you cooking?
I love to cook, but I love to explore. It's always something different. Big group, maybe it's something like some sort of tacos, or maybe it's throwing some steaks on or something. Yeah, it's tough to say. I love exploring different foods and different recipes, and it's always something different. Okay. I made some fried rice and orange chicken tonight, actually. So
nice. Awesome. Yeah. I'll be right over. All right, next one. Okay, book you are currently reading or recently read?
I'm reading Make Your Own Bed.
Yes.
I don't know. You're probably familiar.
Admiral McRaven. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I there's a good buddy of mine, used to be one of my assistant coaches, who's recommended some books to me. He's big on mindset coaching and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely a good,
read. Yeah. You know, going back to my days, growing up with my background and my dad's background, that was, little did I know, I was getting such a monumental life lesson. But that was that was one I remember from a young age, probably around the same time that you were playing the drums, right? Same age, somewhere in there, 5-6 years old. He would stress making your bed, because he said right away, he's like, boom, you've already accomplished
something. I'm pounding on drums in my basement and you're talking about making your own bed.
Hospital corners,
right? different childhoods. Yeah.
Now, I'm sure along the way you've seen his actual speech at the UT commencement, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty legendary. It's been out there for a long time, but yeah. Okay. Next one. Professional coach, maybe you pattern yourself after the most, right? Not saying that you're trying to be them, but you take a lot of those ideas, a particular coach or two, maybe.
This is going to kill me. Rizzo is going to have a field day with this. As a United supporter, it kills me to even say it too. I really like some of the stuff that Jurgen does.
Good man.
Hurts my heart to even say that. Oh, I can't believe I just said that.
It's recorded. I'm probably going to play this. Yeah, I'll specifically play this cut.
I'm going to hear from Rizzo tomorrow.
Awesome. Now, why? I mean, I know I kind of have some ideas why, right? Me personally, but why you? Because I think that says a lot, right? If someone who has such poor choice in clubs such as Manchester United and can admit that a Klopp, why would you say him?
The success is undeniable, but I think what it really is the way that he talks to, with, and about his players. I just think when you look at a coach who, you know, really confidently strides the line of there for the players, but also there for the winning and success and you know, all of that. I think he does a great job of both, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, his unique thing, I think, from my perspective, is his ability to also really like next level connect with his communities, right? So you look at it from his track record, from Mainz to Dortmund to Liverpool, you know, he's so beloved at each one of those places, right?
I think he also does a really good job of complaining about how many fixtures he has to play.
Yeah, no doubt.
I wish I was playing midweek fixtures right now. Come on.
No doubt. Yeah, that does sometimes get on my nerves. So I'm not going to lie. All right, next one, current. So you'll love this one. So this is a two-parter, right? So current music playlist and current podcast playlist. What's in the rotation? If we go and pick up your phone right now, what are we going to find?
Music. I have a very eclectic taste, I think. I guess I don't know. I mean, it's become a little more mainstream. Jacob Collier just came out with a new album, and I don't know if you're familiar with that guy, but he's a brilliant musician.
That name rings a bell. What is that? You have to tell me more.
I wish I could explain the genre to you, but really he's just somebody who explores a little bit of everything. Okay. I think that for me, I enjoy a lot of, you know, if I'm just in the kitchen cooking, it'll be, you know, jazz. If I'm I listen to a lot of funk. You know, in terms of current folks, it would be like Wolfpack or Corey Wong. You know, I really what's another one that I was just pulling up recently. I think that's you know, more of what you'd find in terms of the music playlist these days. I also really enjoy, you know, some indie. So Noah Kahn's playing in the house quite a bit. We're fans in this house. Yeah. So
nice. Okay. Yeah. Now podcast playlist. What do you
think? Well, of course, 50/50.
There you go. Awesome. We'll give you that again. There we go. Two times.
I do listen quite often to the Levitard show.
Okay.
It's like a daily sports podcast.
Yeah.
I think at this point it's literally a security blanket. Like I've listened to them since I was probably 20 years old, and that's a terrifyingly long time ago. So yeah, that's a big one for me. When I'm with my wife, we'll often listen to like true crime podcasts or things like that. So
true crime. I don't know what it is. I've had this conversation repeatedly since probably October, November, maybe. Just true crime genre is just so incredibly popular, right? It's really in demand, right? So, and there's
believe I forgot Soccer Chat, of course. Yeah,
there you go. Okay, nice, awesome. There was one, it's not true crime, it's kind of a newer genre I'm diving into a little bit. I think it goes under, it's not horror, I think it kind of goes under paranormal. There's one, it's going to be a plug. I'm giving a plug here for no reason, but it's called Night Owl, right? So Night Owl, it's based out of Austin, you know, here in Texas. And some interesting stories, man, some interesting stories and firsthand accounts and all this stuff. And they do a nice spin of narrating the story. You know, but these are real world kind of accounts, not just, you know, fiction stories.
Yeah.
So, all right. Next one we got here for you. So Fair. I kind of know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. So favorite and least favorite soccer team.
Yeah. So obviously I wouldn't even, I think the answer for both is Manchester United. No.
You're not the first to actually say, I think Randy Waldrum said the same thing at one point.
He's a United supporter, so of course. Yeah.
I think he said the same thing at one point on here.
You know what? I think in terms of just to point out some grassroots clubs that I think are doing really great stuff. Forward Madison does obviously a really great job, and that's kind of near and dear to my heart over in that area. Milwaukee Torrent, I used to coach for them a little bit, and they're over in the MPSL. And then Bateau FC, which is over in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and some friends of mine who pretty closely running that program. And I think they just do really great work at the UPSL level. But in terms of Manchester United, definitely my favorite. Sadly, I fell in love with David De Gea, which I kind of missed the boat on like the actual good years. I didn't really follow in high school. Like I watched a little bit, but I wasn't really like, I was more of an MLS fan then.
Those are fighting words in some circles now. So be careful, right?
My least favorite club. I have so many obnoxious Chelsea supporter friends. I am outnumbered in my assistant coach. He's the director of operations for both the men's and women's programs. Him and the men's coach at Monmouth are both Arsenal fans. So that's obviously not a lot of fun for me right now.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Take your pick. Like do I like any clubs right now? Like so even my own.
Do you just want to say London basically?
Yeah. Let's just go with that.
You're probably better off saying London. Forward Madison. The first time I really learned, like I had heard of them, but I didn't know as much about them. I learned more about them through, remember the old, old director of education for United Soccer Coaches back in the NSCAA days, Ian Barker. You remember Ian Barker?
Yeah.
That's how I kind of learned more about them was through him from his from his time with them. So interesting. Hey, speaking of which, lower league, I got a little shout out to USL championship season starts this weekend, San Antonio FC. So
there you go.
All right, next one here for you. So as a coach, not as a player, any game day superstitions? I love asking this one. Game day superstitions or rituals?
When we are about 15 minutes, if it's an away match, when we're 15 minutes from the stadium, I take the last 15 minutes of the bus ride to play some music, something to just kind of clear my mind. Because I know after that, then there's going to be a thousand things between then and game time. But if it's a home game, then it's just me getting to the field, usually about 3 hours early and doing the same walking around the field. As a D3 program, we have an incredible grounds crew that takes care of the grass, but I'm setting up the flags and, pinning down the nets and all that stuff. And something that I really have come to enjoy because I take that time to just listen to music, walk around the field, enjoy the moment. Mm-hmm. So that would be it for me.
Yeah. I'm a cone guy, sitting down our cones for our pregame warmup. I love being out there by myself away from everybody and just, that's what I'm doing.
I drive my assistant coach crazy with the way I do cones because I'll be like, hey, can you go set up this thing, this grid, whatever. He'll set it up and then he'll see me sneak over at some point or another and just kick one over a little bit and just like slide that one. He's like, sure. Yeah, whatever, man.
Right.
He catches me every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Every now and then I'll have some of our players put out cones, our same setup. And then something that I'll knock out in 2-3 minutes. I look over 12 minutes later, they're still there. I'm just like,
trust the players at the cones.
I tell them, it's like, hey, it's not so easy now, is it? So, and then I tell them the little secret, right? When you're setting down cones is you got to walk backwards. Right?
Yeah.
That's the trick. So.
I don't trust anyone that walks forwards when I set up their cones.
Exactly. All right. So next one, Netflix, Prime Video, what have you, whatever, Paramount, most recent binge watch.
My wife and I have been watching Love Island.
Which one is
reality? That? Some reality TV. Yeah, the UK version, of course. We do like to watch some reality TV. We'll also watch, you know, we've had a lot of shows that we've loved over the years. I think spelled differently, so this is not, I'm not swearing on your podcast, but Schitt's Creek, of course, is one that I think we connected over and we still will watch from time to time. Is kind of like that one to go back to. So
But that, now that one's been over for a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people started falling in love with it really kind of over, or just before, kind of over the pandemic, and that's
Did it kind of become one of those phenomenons that takes off well after it's over?
I think it was still in, it was still somewhat in progress. I think it was a little bit of a slow burner compared to some, but yeah.
All time favorite series.
Oh, wow. I loved Friday Night Lights.
Good. There you go. It's a good one.
I definitely have a soft spot for shows like The Office and Parks and Rec. There's so many. It's hard to narrow it down. We'll just stick to that. I could think of 12 more off the top of my head, but we're just gonna leave it there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. My personal all time favorite is The Sopranos. That's my all time.
I haven't watched The Sopranos.
Yeah. You know, here's a little trivia. I have not seen all of Friday Night Lights.
Is that even allowed when you live in Texas?
Right. Right. Well, because I was so big for the longest time, I was so big on the movie, right? Because
so people are like, I'm not watching this show.
Right. Right. Oh, the movie. Yeah. The movie was just, it was so like up there that, but yeah, I mean, and I haven't made it through all the seasons just for a number
of reasons. I think the early version of me as a coach was literally styled after Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights, which is not a realistic way to be a coach necessarily, but you learn, right?
Yeah. No doubt. And shout out to our good friend, Ken Murphy, photography.
Thanks, Ken.
Joining us. Ken, thank you always. Really appreciate your support and listening to us. Phenomenal work, phenomenal photographer. So Ken, I will definitely be in contact soon because we're working on a project where we'd love to have some photographers join us. So we'll definitely be in contact soon. So thank you for joining us, Ken. All right, next one. All right, so we talked about the binge watch. Next one. So bucket list destination.
Place. There's so many places I haven't been. I have not traveled as much as I would like. Bucket list. I have not been to the UK, so I haven't had a chance to explore a place like London. And I think that would, I mean, going to Manchester, I think, and Old Trafford has to be at the top of the list. No question. I think in general, getting to some Premier League stadiums is definitely high on my list.
Yeah, you got to make it. You got to make it at some point. I've been lucky enough to experience a few of them, and the experience is phenomenal. It does. Watching on TV, you can feel it watching it on TV, right? But it doesn't do it justice until you're there. So
2 years ago, my wife and I went to Portugal, and we ended up going over. We were in Lisbon for most of the trip, but we went over to Porto and got to see the Portuguese national team play against Turkey. And then that was an incredible atmosphere. It was a World Cup qualifier. I think with that win, they qualified for the World Cup. And so it was a heavy, heavy, intense crowd in there as far as like, as that game went on. And then the first goal is scored and just the heavens open up. It's just crazy.
That's a place I want to get to. I have not been. And my wife and
I see Porto Stadium, and it's amazing because it doesn't have the bells and whistles of like a, you know, like a stadium over in Arlington.
Right.
All right. It's very much like brick and mortar watcher football. Like that's, you know, there's some beauty in that.
Yeah. And Portugal for some reason has been a place that has really kind of gotten on our radar more and more and more. I'd say in the last, I don't know, 5 years, maybe.
Best destination and experience of my life was Lisbon for a week, and just We didn't plan a ton. We didn't fill our schedule. We just explored. It was a wonderful experience.
And then they have that, I don't know if you've seen that series. HBO had a series on them a couple of years ago, probably about, I don't know, two and a half years ago, maybe. The 100 foot waves. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The big surfing thing over there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was phenomenal. So, cool. Yeah, check that out. All right. So we got a couple left here for you, coach. So, all right. So superpower question here, speak every language or talk to animals?
I was so ready to say speak every language. And then you said talk to animals and I'm like, I don't know. Like I would,
this one is actually very easy for me.
I mean, I think speak every language. Wow, that's tough. I'm going to say speak every language just because I think, especially as somebody who loves a sport that the world loves, I think that would be
correct. Cool. Correct.
But I don't even know. It'd be fun to talk to animals. We have no idea.
Yeah, they probably don't like us.
Right? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. All right. So, and we're wrapping up here. Two left really, but this is your last official one. One thing. So, all right. Lucas Henderson is appointed the soccer czar in America, right? One thing, what's the very first item, agenda item number one, you would change regarding soccer in America tomorrow?
How do you choose? I'm going to go ahead and while promotion relegation is very much on my mind, I'm just going to leave that alone for now. I think that the problem is that I would change the pay-to-play system, but I don't know how because I haven't necessarily taken the time to address this problem. It's a big one. It's massive, and it's hard to fix, but I do think it needs fixing. So I would say that. Or maybe I would just put a futsal court in every city in America. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the issue with the pay-to-play, right? Is on some level, someone still has to pay, right?
Yeah. So there's some level, it's obviously very layered, and I don't have the bandwidth to explore it at this point.
Yeah. And some of it, I almost view it as the current model with the pay-to-play. I almost view it like you talked about the banking system not too long ago, right? Of the too big to fail. Mm-hmm. Well, I view it like it's the too big or too far down the road to maybe change course, right? Change direction. So
it's very incremental. And it has to be intentional, and we're definitely not anywhere near that at this point. Yeah, so.
And that's where I think you're onto something with the futsal courts, right?
An organization that does that, and I wish I could shout it out right now, and I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but there's an organization out there that that's a big initiative. There's a nonprofit based in I think Des Moines, Iowa, that they are looking. Their goal is to have put up futsal courts in neighborhoods that would benefit from them. And I think it's such a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Well, if you find that, send that to us. I'll shout it out. Put it out there. So for sure, appreciate that. Well, that's going to do it with our official questions here for you, Coach. We got one more for you. Kind of a question for you for me. So. Something that we're taking on a little newer bit here is normally I'm the one asking the questions, but in this case you had one question, any question, whatever, something you want to throw my way, feel free. What's any questions for me or a question for me, I guess?
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to see you. Are you guys still in the mix in the playoffs?
Yeah. Actually, thank you for asking. Tomorrow is my girl's senior night, right? And we're currently sitting in second place behind a very, very strong current first place program in Alamo Heights. You know, great coach, friend of mine, and Chris Sharp, and he's done a phenomenal job there. So we're currently in second place, and we're coming up on four matches left. So we have two this week, and after this week, we'll have two matches left in the regular season. So, yeah, state playoffs here in Texas start in, 20 days?
Yeah, best of luck. I guess I was curious because I've seen you guys have done well. And, you come on here and you give a lot of coaches a platform and help them talk about their stuff and their programs. But I want to make sure people know that you're doing the thing too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. It doesn't make it easy, right, because you definitely don't want to come across as a homer by any means. But, I don't have any problem talking about my girls, and I've been just very blessed to be there. My first year there at San Antonio MacArthur, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm loving it. I'm having fun. And it's just I walked into kind of a bit of a tricky situation, but zero regrets. And I've loved every second of it, and phenomenal young ladies. I've seen how much I've seen them grow, just, you know, and it can sound like coach speak, I get it, but how much I've seen them grow just off the field, off the pitch this year, let alone on it. It's the kind of thing that gets you in here as a coach, where you just, where you know that it's like you're a deeper sense of pride beyond just what you're seeing on the field.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. So no, I appreciate that. Thank you for asking that.
Yeah.
And so that's going to do it, coach, as we wrap up here. So as is customary, usually what we do is we like to kind of open up the floor for our guest, and in stoppage time, what we call our just any final thoughts, shout outs, thank yous, anything that's on your mind as it relates to the game. The floor is yours.
I guess if I'm shouting people out, got to start with my daughter, who's 7.5 months old. So Monroe,
congrats,
man. Love you very much. You will never watch this, I assume, but who knows? And my wife,
you never know. She's going to hold the being a Manchester United she's going to hold the Klopp comment against you. That's,
you know what? I can't decide if I should subject her to that. We'll cross that bridge when we get there, but she does watch the games with me now. So, my wife is an incredibly supportive and wonderful person who's also incredibly busy and successful as a professor at another college nearby. And so shout out to her. Shout out to my players, who are just, you know, a wonderful and incredible community of growing human beings. Very proud of what we're doing over there. And I think it's important to point out that the best, I think, is still yet to come. And I'm excited to see what that's going to be. And I guess lastly, I think there's a really cool community of coaches out here. And it's one of the best things about my job is that I get to connect with all these people. So people like yourself, who, you know, are clearly very passionate and in it for the right reasons. So I love being a part of this community and enjoy what I do. I mean, gosh, if we didn't enjoy what we do, why are we doing it? So
right, exactly.
It's really cool to see so many people out there in kind of this labor of love. So
absolutely. Well said. And, you know, and I appreciate that too. And I think the big thing too is just want to definitely continue to wish you the absolute best of luck at Monmouth, your program, right, with your women's program. And, you know, just brick by brick, put your head down and just keep at it. And, you know, it dawned on me. I was like, man, when we started talking, I was like, he's been there 3 years already. Right. So
it happened quick somehow. And yet it feels like it's been here forever.
I know. Exactly. And it was just kind of, that's why when I asked you, it's like, man, it goes back to
shout out to all my Texas recruits that I got when I was over at Bryant Stratton. Those are some awesome players. Awesome people. Go.
Yeah. We got, well, hey, let me know when you're going to be down in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, again, definitely, right? Got to come back.
For sure. Would love to have you. And, you know, we can treat you, show you some things here along the way. So I'd love to have you.
Let's do it.
So my final thoughts, kind of pretty brief. Big thing that I kind of wanted to mention before I forget, if you're watching this, obviously, if you're hearing this after the fact, it's not, you won't be able to see it. But if you're watching this down on the bottom ticker, our next episode of Inside Texas High School Soccer, which is our spinoff series of the 50-50 podcast, will air this Sunday, March 10th at 5 p.m., 5:05 p.m. to be exact. Episode 5 of Inside Texas High School Soccer, where we will be looking at overview, I guess at this point, not really a preview, but an overview of Region 3 and Region 4. We'll also look at our game, but we'll give our game ball awards, our players of the week, or our teams of the week, I'm sorry, game ball awards, teams of the week, and we might be introducing possibly a new award as well. And we might have a special guest joining us, a coach from maybe one or two of the regions that we'll be discussing joining us as well. So definitely don't want to miss that. Again, that is next episode 5 of Inside Texas High School Soccer, this Sunday, March 10th, 5:05 p.m. Central Time. Make sure you tune in and join us. But that's really my main plug. Other than that, big thing is, this is kind of, we're entering for Texas High School Soccer players, coaches. You guys know we're kind of entering that critical period, right? I know I saw saw a few people referring to it as Judgment Week, right? Talking about how just we'll have a much, much clearer picture of a lot of district races after when this week is said and done. So best of luck to all coaches, all players. Yeah. Stay healthy and stay eligible. That's the big thing with the eligibility check coming up. So that is going to do it. Really appreciate you again for Coach Lucas Henderson, the head women's soccer coach of Monmouth College, the Fighting Scots. I love saying that, the Fighting Scots.
Yeah, Fighting Scots.
Yeah. Roll Scots. Yeah. So again, you can join, you can follow us, I should say. You can find us on Twitter X, as I call it now, at 50_50pod, on Instagram at 50_50_50podcast. You can also find us on YouTube. Just simply search the 50_50podcast. And you can find us on all your major podcast platforms. Same thing, just 50_50podcast. Would love to have you. Make sure you go on there, subscribe, give us a rating. If you think we're great, tell us we're great. If you think we stink, tell us you think we stink, and we'll work on making sure that we're getting better. But only you can only tell us we stink if you're going to come back and listen more. So that's those are the rules.
I like that.
So again, for Coach Henderson, I am Coach Cano. And until the next time, you know what to do. Keep downloading and keep listening. You've been listening to the 50/50 podcast, powered by National Scouting Report. Help us continue to grow by liking, rating, and subscribing on all major podcast platforms. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at 50_50pod, on Instagram at 50_50podcast, as well as on YouTube at the 50_50podcast. Until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.